Tonight I want to talk to you about something that we just kind of started talking about a couple of nights ago, and we're just going to kind of continue it on tonight, and that's the topic of what does a Christian really look like? You ever thought about that? What does a Christian really look like? You think in your mind for just a second, what do you think a Christian ought to look like? What do you think is the mark of a Christian? If you're going to put a stamp on a Christian, what kind of stamp would you put on? What kind of mark would you brand them with? Well, some of you are thinking, you know, well, if you're a pretty good guy, if you're a good guy, well, then you got to be a Christian. That's a good Christian if you're a good guy. Maybe some of you are thinking, well, you know, if you go to church, well, that really makes you a Christian if you come to church. That'll do it. That'll do it. A lot of you think, well, you know, if I walk down the aisle, you know, that makes me a Christian. Automatically, that makes me a Christian. Some of you are thinking, you know, well, you know, if you eat Girl Scout cookies, you know, you're a Christian. That really makes you. If you're president of your youth group, you know, you're a Christian. If you believe in Santa Claus, then you're a Christian, right? Right. Well, it seems like somewhere along the line, people have gotten all kinds of ideas because I've heard all of those before from some place or another, you know. And yet the Bible is very plain and very clear when it talks about what a Christian looks like and when it gives the mark of a Christian. The mark of a Christian is very simple. It's very simply that we love other people. That's the mark of a Christian. You don't know what a Christian looks like, then you look at other people who call themselves Christians, and if they're loving other people, then you can be sure that they're Christians. I've got a buddy who lives in Nashville, Tennessee, and we went out to San Diego earlier in the year. We had a fantastic time out there at this youth workers conference. One night we skipped out and we went down to Tijuana. Got a guy to take us down there, you know. And Tijuana was kind of a wild and woody place, you know. All these little shops and open markets and open stores and everything, you know. And you go in and you try to see how much you can get these guys down. You know, they ask you $30 for a $5 deal, you know. And you see if you can get them down to $2 for a $5 deal, you know, so something like that. It's just one big, it's just like a great big old circus, you know. And we were down there, we were going from one shop to another. I was looking for a handbag for my wife, and he was looking for some kind of thing for his wife, you know. We were just hopping from one store to another, just having the best time, just trying to get these guys to come down on their prices, and they wouldn't do it. We'd walk out on them, and then we'd come back, you know, and all this kind of thing. We were just hassling them back and forth, and they were hassling us. We were just having a great time doing it, you know. They were pros, we were amateurs, but we were sneaky and mean. And we were just having a great, you know, we were having a great time doing that. And then all of a sudden we came around the corner and started back up the street. And right there on the corner, laying on the curb, there was a little girl laying there on the curb. And she was just vomiting all over the place. I mean, she was just so out of it, she was just laying down the curb, just vomiting all over the place. And a little old bitty boyfriend, you know, the little skinny guy was standing over there, man. He was, you know, he was Mexican, and he was just wandering all around. They'd come down from East Los Angeles out of the ghetto up there, come down in a car that didn't look like that it could get out of the car graveyard, you know. And they were down there, just what they'd come down there for was to get married, you know. And you know why they hadn't gotten married? Because 5 days earlier, his girl started drinking, and she hadn't quit yet. She hadn't had a chance. Isn't that unbelievable? There that girl was. She was just laying there on the ground, and she was sick as a dog, and nobody would help her. He didn't know what to do, and his other buddy was dead drunk. And you know what? All along the street road, there are about 15 or 20 guys hustling along the street road, trying to get guys to go upstairs and be with the prostitutes that they were hustling for. And not one of those guys would go over and help this girl. And she must have had been there about a half an hour, 45 minutes when we came around the corner. And Larry and I picked her up. He picked her up and she just, you know, she was just limp. And her boyfriend was so, you know, he was so glad that somebody had finally come along to help, you know. And Larry and I picked her up. And we were trying to help her out, you know. And he went into the store to get some ice to kind of soothe her head. And he got the ice, and the guy in the store could see out there, and he had watched the whole process. And when Larry started to get the ice, he said, $1, please. In a very nice term, Larry told him to stick it in his ear, and he walked out with the ice. So he came out there with the ice, and he began to soothe this girl's head, you know, and to rub the ice on her head and try to get her to feel better. And she was so sick. And we began to walk up the street, you know, carrying this girl. We got halfway up the street and she began to vomit again. She vomited all over Larry. He was carrying her, you know. And then he gave her to me and we walked on up the street about 25 or 30 more yards, something like that, on up to the car. We put her in the car and she continued to get sicker and sicker and sicker. And this poor little guy was just frantic out of his mind. And then we began to just share with him and with him and his buddy who was with him. And just what Christ could do in his life. And the guy who had initiated that whole thing was Larry. He was up ahead of me. He had started out doing that. And you know, I was impressed by that. I don't know whether I would have stopped and helped or not, but I was with him. And he did it. And I was impressed by the fact that as a guy who loves Jesus Christ, he was loving somebody else. He was caring about somebody else. And as Christians, a lot of times we have the opportunities are all around us. We walk down the street and the opportunities are there. And we pass so many of them by. We just keep on going by them, day after day after day. I want us to get one thing straight. Larry's ability to love this girl didn't come from the fact that he just has a nice human nature. It came from one simple fact that God had poured His love down through him, and His love, the love that God had given him, was pouring out into other people. Because over and over again, I saw how He was relating to people with the love of God flowing through Him. Our life is very basically, like we said the other night, it's a channel. It's a glass that the water just comes up in it, and then it begins to flow out over. It's a channel or a vessel that the water can just flow through, the love of God can just flow through. And God's love flows through us. But it can't flow through us until something has happened inside of us, until we have experienced God's love in our life. There's no possible way for us to know anything about loving somebody else until we have experienced that within our lives. Does that make sense to you? A boy came up here to me the other night and he said, listen, he says, you know, our beliefs are really different. He may be here tonight, I don't know. Our beliefs are really different. I belong to another denomination. I believe you can just love other people. And I began to try to share with them that you can't just love other people because you don't have it in you. We're too selfish. Our channel gets all clogged up and we get messed up and there's no possible way that we can love other people except the love of God comes through us. See, because we're very basically selfish people. I told the kids over at Northside this morning that it's a lot like when you get your annual back. You know when y'all get your annual? What do you, at Lewis, what's your annual name? What's the name of it? The Pioneer? Hooray for the Pioneer. What is it? What is it, the butter? The Highlander? Well, that's 384, I tell you. Okay, that's fantastic. Okay, so you get that back, you get your annual back, you know, you get the Pioneer back, and you get the Highlander back. And the first day it comes out, what do you do? You open it up, of course. And what do you do then? You look at it. And who do you look for first? Your best friend, right? Isn't that right? No. That's not right. You look for your boyfriend first, don't you? Mm-mm. No way. Who do you look for first? You look for good old number one, right? That's right. You look for me. You know why you look for me? Because you want to see if your hair is all in place and if your smile's right, see? So everybody thinks you're really cool, right? That's right. And the reason you do that is very simple. Now, that's a funny deal, you know. But the point of it is really the way we actually are, and the way we actually are is self-centered and selfish and sinful and separated from God because we're all so crazy. The human being, then our channel gets all clogged up with our selfishness and the love of God is not able to come into us or able to go out of us. And yet there's hope. And that's the fantastic part about it. In 1967, they had the riots up in Newark, New Jersey. Do you remember that? Probably most of you do. Some of you couldn't read yet, but maybe you can, but you may have heard about it or something. They had the riots up there, and there was gunfire in the street, and there was fighting in the street, and all kinds of wild things were happening, you know? And a little girl was in her house, and just she and her mom, nobody else was there. And she heard all this noise outside, and all the fighting, and all the gunfire and everything, and she said, "Mommy, Mommy," she said, "I'm afraid." And her mom said, "Listen, honey, don't worry about it. God's with you." And she went away, and then she came back in a few minutes, and she said, "Mommy, Mommy, I'm afraid." And her mom told her, "Don't worry about it, it's okay, because God's with you." And she seemed satisfied with that, and then she went away. She came back in a few minutes, and she was with more and more noise coming down the street. She said, "Mommy, I'm afraid." And mom says, "Honey, don't worry about it, because God's going to be with you. He is with you." And the little girl said, "What a family sin." She said, "But Mom, I want somebody with skin on." And you know something? That's exactly what Jesus Christ has done. He has taken God, as Colossians 1:15 says, the invisible God has become visible in the person of Jesus Christ. Christ is the visible expression of the invisible God. Christ is the incarnation. He is God fleshed out in the form of a human being. God who has put himself here on the earth in the form of you and of me so that we can understand what God is like, so that we can get a handle on God and understand him and see what he is really like. That's what Jesus Christ has done. He put his skin on for you and for me. And Christians down through the years have continued to let the love of God flow through their lives. And the way that they let the love of God flow through their lives is they have put the skin off of God. And they have allowed God to work through their lives. And people have been able to see it because they love other people. See? Back in the first century, the early Christians were tortured, martyred, burned, beaten. They did all kinds of things to early Christians. They fed them to the lions. They used them as gladiators. Nero used some of them as torches as he was burning Rome. Man, you think you've got stuff in your household. You think you've got stuff at school. The early Christians really had it rough, man. They really had a tough time. And you know what the pagans would say about it? As the lions were eating them, as the gladiators were killing them, as they were being burned as torches. You know what the pagans used to always say about them? "Gee whiz, look how they love each other." They put skin on. They put the love of God in their life on, and it was moving out into the world. They were showing the love of God through their humanness and their personality and who they were. Jesus Christ, the incarnation, early Christians dying for what they believe, and people seeing that they love one another. Now, what about you? Where are you in all this? Do you have the mark of a Christian on you? Do you have the stamp of a Christian on you? Do you look like a Christian? Do you love other people? Do people know at your work and in your school and where you are that the love of Jesus Christ is flowing through your life and you have the stamp of being a Christian on you? Do you have the ability to love other people? Is that a part of your personality? Is that a part of your makeup? If you don't have Jesus Christ, I'm afraid it's not. As loving as you might seem to be, in your own human way, there is no possibility for you to love with the kind of love, the kind of dying love, the kind of martyr love, the kind of agape love that Jesus Christ can give you for somebody else to the point where you would actually die for that person because you love them so much. The mark of a Christian. Christians love one another. Now, from the point of view of the Bible, and some of you are afraid I wasn't going to get to the text, but we're going to get to it now. If you want to turn to it, it's in Luke 10. And it's the story of the Good Samaritan. I want us to look at that tonight and just check it out in terms of what a guy looks like. He looks like a Christian. And we're just going to look at this for a few minutes. Let's read that story. It says here, one day an expert on Moses' laws came to test Jesus' orthodoxy by asking him this question. Teacher, what does a man need to do to live forever in heaven? And Jesus replied, what does Moses' law say about it? It says, he replied, that you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and you must love your neighbor just as much as you love yourself. And what did Jesus say? Right on, brother, right on. Do that, and you'll live. The man wanted to justify his lack of love for some kinds of people, so he asked, which neighbors? And Jesus replied with an illustration. A Jew going on a trip from Jerusalem to Jericho was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes and money, and they beat him up, and they left him lying half dead beside the road. And by chance, a Jewish priest came along, and when he saw the man lying there, he crossed over to the other side of the road and passed him by. And a Jewish temple assistant walked over and looked at him lying there, and then he went on by. But a despised Samaritan came along, and when he saw him, he felt deep pity. Kneeling beside him, the Samaritan soothed the wounds with medicine and bandaged them. And then he put the man on his donkey and walked along beside him until they came to an inn where he nursed him through the night. And the next day he handed the innkeeper $2 $20 bills and told him to take care of the man. If his bill runs higher than that, he said, I'll pay the difference next time I'm here. And then Jesus says, now which one of these three would you say was the neighbor to the bandit's victim? The man wouldn't even repeat his name. He wouldn't even call him a Samaritan, but he said, the one who showed him some pity. And then Jesus said, yeah, man, that's right. And now you go and do the same thing. Some interesting things about this story. To begin with, it starts off with this Pharisee who comes to Jesus. And he comes to Jesus asking some questions. And he begins to ask the question, what does a man have to do to be able to get into heaven? In other words, he was asking the question, what does a man have to do to become a Christian? And Jesus doesn't just, you know, outright answer. He lets him answer his own question. And most of us know the answer to our own questions, if we're really honest with ourselves. He says, what does Moses' law say about it? And the man says, it says that if you love the Lord your God with all your mind, heart, soul, and strength, and if you love your neighbor as yourself, then you'll get to heaven, and then you'll be a Christian. Now that's not too hard, is it? That's not very difficult at all. If you love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength, and yet the problem comes not with understanding what to do, but in doing it, because most of us have never really come to the place where we could give Jesus Christ all, and let Him have all, and let Him have everything, where we would turn from our sin and allow Jesus Christ to be number one in our lives. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Man, Jesus would say, love Him with everything you got, brother. And then He said, you'll be able to love your neighbor as you love yourself. There's a fellow named C.T. Studd. I don't know whether any of you have ever heard of him or not. C.T. Studd. He was a guy who lived back in the last, the 18th century. And he was a guy who was a fantastic athlete. One of the greatest athletes who's ever lived, as a matter of fact. He was the greatest cricket player who's ever played cricket in the history of the game. Fantastic athlete. Had a tremendous potential of being a professional and making all kinds of money. He came from a very, very, very wealthy family. You had to play cricket in England. Came from a very wealthy family. Came from a well-to-do family. Had a fantastic education. He had everything that you need to make it, man, to make it. And somehow he got involved with this little group of guys called the Cambridge Seven. And the Cambridge Seven was a group of seven guys who began to pray together that God would show them how to take the world for Jesus Christ. C.T. Studd came to the point where he gave his entire life to Jesus Christ. And they began to pray about it. And pretty soon they began to realize that there was no way for them to sit there and pray about winning the world to Christ unless they were willing to do something about it. And so these seven men committed themselves to worldwide missions. And C.T. Studd spent the rest of his life going to India and Africa and China, where he laid out his life, sleeping on boards, getting food where he could, getting sick, having children die, having his wife being sick, being separated from his wife almost his whole life. The reason being, because he loved Jesus Christ with all his heart, and he followed God's command to love his neighbor as he loved himself. Man, if God called you to be a missionary in Africa, would you go? If he called you to be a missionary in China, would you go? Would you do anything he asked you to do? I've heard a lot of kids say, "Now, I'd never become a Christian because I'm afraid God would send me over to Africa or down in South America or somewhere way away, and man, I'd be scared to death." And they're right. Because when you start taking God seriously, he may just do that. And if you come to Jesus Christ, then you've got to be willing to do that. Now, probably he's not going to send you over there like he did to see these stuff. But he can never use you to your fullest extent until you're willing to go. And love God with all your mind, soul, heart, and strength, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Well, the story goes on. And it says here that the Pharisee who came to Jesus really didn't want to know the answer to his questions, you know? He really wasn't honest in what he came to do. It says here that the man wanted to justify his lack of love for some kinds of people. Well, how do you justify your lack of love? Here's this guy, and he does it pretty much probably like we do, you know? He liked to be around only those kind of people that he wanted to be around. He wasn't about to be around anybody who was not like him, see? He wasn't about to be around anybody who didn't think like he thought, or dressed like he dressed, or had the clothes that he had, or had the education that he had, or had the nice church that he had, see? These other guys weren't quite as religious as he was. And so he didn't want to have anything to do with anybody else. That's one of the characteristics of Pharisees. Exclusive, man, exclusive. He was what I'd call a WASP in our society. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant redneck. That's what he was. Because what he did, he painted himself into a corner by liking only those people that he liked to be around. That was one thing that he did. A couple other things he did. Another one that he did was that he was the kind of guy who liked people for what they could do for him. Now, man, I've been like that. My life before I became a Christian was exactly like that. I know what that's all about. And a lot of you do too. Because you use people, you manipulate people, you make them do what you want them to do instead of loving them just for who they are and caring about them for just who they are. I love oranges. Boy, I could drink a gallon of orange juice for breakfast and eat three or four oranges during the day. I love them. You know? And I'll get an orange and I like to just get a great big juicy one. You know? As few seeds as possible, but a great big juicy one. And I just take it and I go, and just bite the top out of it and go, and spit it out. And then I just like to suck on it. You know? And I just suck it and suck it and suck it until all the juice is out, and you know, and then I just rip it open and I go, and rip the inside out and just chew them up really good. And sometimes when I get really fired up about an orange, I'll even eat part of the peeling. Because I like them that much, that's right. I love oranges. The only problem with that is I don't really love oranges. I use oranges. And I suck them, and I suck them, and I suck them until I can get everything out of them. And then you know what I do? If I don't eat all the wine, I throw it away. And I discard the seeds. And I have no concern for those oranges. Just like that Pharisee. He had no real concern for somebody else. He was just using him and manipulating for all he could get out of him. A Christian doesn't do that. A Christian doesn't look like that. A Christian doesn't have that mark on him. There's another characteristic that this guy had. Really interesting thing here. Because he's a lot like us. He liked to talk about it a lot. He came to Jesus to do a lot of talking, see. But he didn't really have any intention about doing anything about it, see. He wanted to talk about the big game, you know. He wanted to talk about getting into heaven. He wanted to talk to big Jesus because Jesus was the number one hit of the day. He wanted to talk about that because that was the fact. That was the thing to do, see. Especially for a great religious leader like him, it could add to his esteem as a person. And yet he wasn't really interested in doing anything about it. All he wanted to do, really, was talk about it. He never could really put it into action. The mark of a Christian is that we're able to put our love into action. We're able to put our talk into action. We're able to put our church into action. We're able to put our bodies into action. We're able to put our prayers into action. Not like the Pharisee. So he came to Jesus to justify his lack of love for other people, see? And then Jesus tells him the story about the Samaritan. And he said, there was a guy who was beaten up and was laying out on the road, going from Jerusalem to Jericho. Now you have to understand what that's really like. Because the road from Jerusalem to Jericho, Jerusalem is 2,300 feet above sea level. Jericho is 1,300 feet below sea level down at the Dead Sea. So that makes 2,600 feet of a drop-off in 20 miles. That's pretty good. That makes it a pretty rocky, rough, and raunchy road to travel over. Right? And so here this guy's laying out in the middle of this road, probably halfway down the thing, on this rocky road. And he's about half dead. Somebody's beating him up. Halfway between Jerusalem and Jericho. And he's just laying there. And you know, there are some people who are very religious who have no concept of what it means to love other people. And a couple of them came by. One of them was a priest. He was a Jewish priest. He was probably the equivalent, you know, he was probably the equivalent of the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Jerusalem, you know. There he was. And he was coming down there, and he was coming from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he might have had some kind of religious mission. He was going to church down there in Jericho. He was going to preach down there, you know. He's probably having a revival or something down there, you know. And here he comes whipping along down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho, just going for all he was worth, you know, because he was late to church, and he had to get there. And he all of a sudden he sees this guy laying over on the side of the road. And he's coming down there, and he's double mitts and his gant shirt, and his hot-looking shoes, you know, he's got his white shoes and his white belt, and man, he is ready to go to church. And he sees this guy, and what does he do? He walks right on by. Because he knew that if he got his suit dirty, he couldn't get in church. They wouldn't let him in. And so he knew he couldn't stop and help the guy. Because he had to get in church. And then there's another guy that comes along. And he's the temple assistant. He was probably like one of the deacons at the First Baptist Church in Jerusalem. He was a Levite. And he comes down the road. And he has back trouble. And he's walking down the road, but his back is hurting him, and the problem with his back is that he's got a great big yellow stripe right down the middle of it. And the reason he had the great big yellow stripe is because he realized as he was coming down that road that there were a lot of times there were robbers and thieves and brigands on the road. And he knew when he saw that guy that a lot of times they used him as decoys, and so he wasn't about to get in that trap. He wasn't about to stop and help that guy because it might endanger his own well-being. I mean, you know, who picks up hitchhikers anyway? They're all after drugs in the night. And so what he did was he just went right on by. Zoom! He started running after that because he knew safety was first. And helping other people was really second. In the middle of the night, April 1964, there was a girl named Kitty Genovese in New York City. And she was walking down the street toward her apartment. Was about to get to her apartment when she was attacked by a man in the middle of the night. And she began to scream, she began to yell, this man was stabbing her and stabbing her and stabbing her. And she yelled, "I'm dying, I'm dying, somebody help me, call the police, somebody help me, I'm dying." And she was screaming and there were people all around. And it took a half an hour for this man to kill her. Did anybody see what was going on? Only 38 people. And after she had died, the police went back to check it out. They began to question all the witnesses. And as they questioned the witnesses, they found out that none of the people really wanted to get involved. What's it like in your life? Do you have the mark of a Christian on you? Do you have the mark of love on you? Do you have the love of Jesus Christ flowing through your life? Do you want to get involved with other people? Or does it really make that much difference? Is it like Ms. Gleason said? You know, good religion, not much Christianity. The mark of a Christian is love. Love for other people. These two guys weren't able to accomplish it. But there was a man who knew what love was really all about. And he was a despised Samaritan. And do you know what a Samaritan was? A Samaritan was a person who came into being 500 years before when the Jews had been dispersed all over the world and they began to come back to Jerusalem and back to Palestine. And when they came back to Palestine, some of them up in one part of the country started intermarrying with some of the people who had moved in there who were pagans. And these half-breed people were the Samaritans. And because they were half-breeds, because they were not pure Jews, the Jews hated the Samaritans with blood, bitter, bitter hatred. Boy, they couldn't stand it. You think the racial problem in America is bad, the racial problem there is 10 times worse than it is here. The conflict between the Jews and the Samaritans was much worse than it is with the blacks and whites. And here was this American man. This American had come down the road. And here was the Pharisee that Jesus was talking to. And you know who hated the Samaritans worse than anybody else in the whole wide world? The Pharisees, because they were the religious top dogs. And they didn't want to associate with anybody who was a half-breed and didn't keep the laws like they did, and nice and sweet Christians like they were. They called them the bruised and bleeding Pharisees. You know why they called them the bruised and bleeding Pharisees? Because when they would walk down the street and a Samaritan would come by, they would close their eyes and keep on walking. And what they would do is they walked on down the street to get by the Samaritans, they'd start running into telephone poles and lamp posts and all kinds of crazy stuff like that, see? And so they called them the bleeding and bruised Pharisees. This guy that Jesus was talking to hated the kind of guy that Jesus was talking about. Bruised, the bleeding Pharisee, hated the Samaritan with great, great, bitter hatred. He had no love for him. And Jesus uses this story in such a beautiful way. The Samaritan comes down the road, and what does the Samaritan do? The Samaritan stops. He sees the guy on the side of the road, and he's hurt, and he stops, and he begins to minister to him. He has compassion on him. He cares about it. He stops and begins to bind up the man's wounds, and begins to soothe him, and anoint his head with oil, and anoint his body with oil, so that the guy can begin to get well. and he takes him back to the hotel, spends time with him, cares about the man, begins to bind up the man's wounds there at the hotel so he'll get well. He comes down the next day, pays the man $2 $20 bills, and says, "Man, if it's any more, the next time I come through, I'll finish paying for it." He did that because he had compassion. He did that because he had love. And this man, who was the most unlikely of men to have the mark of a Christian, to be religious, he was the man who really showed what it was all about. And I think probably when we get to heaven, we're going to be awfully surprised at how many people are there that we really didn't expect to be there, of all kinds of colors and shapes and forms and all kinds of things. You know why? Because they have the mark of a Christian. And this man had the love of Christ flowing through his life, the love of God flowing through his life and out to that other man, to the point that he was willing to risk his reputation, to risk his life, to risk his clothes, to risk his possessions, to risk everything he had to minister to one man. That's the mark of a Christian. The superabundant love for other people. I've got a buddy out in Texas who he's a youth minister out there, and he says the kids are being won to Christ week after week after week after week in great abundance. And the reason they're being won is because in groups, in prayer groups, all over the city of Fort Worth, there are Christian kids who bring their friends into these groups, and they are loving them with superabundant love. And these kids are so attracted to that they just can't resist it. And they become a part of it. Boy, fantastic. When we begin to reach out to love other people and to care about them. Let me ask you this question. Do people bug you? Do people irritate you? Do they get under your skin and just almost wipe you out? They get you so angry? Does your mom make you so mad that you just want to, man, you just want to claw your hair? Do you get so mad at your kid that, man, you just have to go and take one of these tension, you know, relievers, Anacin or something like that? I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to get mad. You know the advertisement. Do people bug you and irritate you like that? Does your wife, does she bug you? Yeah. I know my wife bugs me. A lot of times. I know I bug her a lot of times. And yet, you know the fantastic thing, the beautiful thing about it all is the very simple fact that the love of Jesus Christ can flow through a person's life. And people don't bug you anymore. The things that they do that bug you, somehow it takes the edge off of them. They don't bug you anymore. Because people who have the love of Jesus Christ flowing through them and out to other people are able to love with superabundant love. They have the mark of a Christian. A guy about 18 or 19 years old came to a deal like this, and he found Jesus Christ in his life. And he made a commitment to himself that he was going to love every person that he met, one by one as he met. He was just going to love every person right down the line, no matter where he found them. That was the first day that he got on the college. And he went to college the next day, and when he went to college, he had to go down the street and catch the bus. He got up that morning, he got up late, his alarm didn't go off, his alarm happens to college students, his alarm didn't go off, he'd been up late the night before, and he was late, and he just barely had time to catch his bus. He came running down, he threw up his clothes, he grabbed the bus there, he grabbed his books, and he started out the door and ran down the street. And just as he was getting down the street, the bus was there and was beginning to pull out, and all of a sudden, as he went by, pow, he knocked a little guy down. Just a little fella. And the kid was holding a notebook. Because he didn't go to school too. And when he hit him, man, the notebook just flew open, and there was loose leaf paper going everywhere, man, just everywhere. All over the street, all over the sidewalk, all over people's yard, and everything. And the guy looked at the little boy, and
then he looked up at his bus, and his bus was just beginning to take off. You know, he still had time to catch it. And he looked back at the little boy, and he looked at the bus, and he remembered his commitment that he made, and he stopped. And he went back, and he got there on his hands and knees. And he began to pick up those papers one by one, one paper at a time. He picked them up, and he got them all in order, just like they were before. And he put them back in the notebook, closed the notebook. He helped the little boy up, wiped his face off, and wiped the tears off his eyes. And he handed him the notebook. He said, "Here, son. Here's the notebook. It's yours." And he turned around and walked off. And the little boy stopped him. He said, "Mister, mister." And the guy turned around. And the little boy looked up at him, tears still rolling out of his eyes. He said, "Mister, are you Jesus? Mister, are you Jesus?" Let's bow in prayer. Father, we thank you right now that the mark of Christians love. And some of us really know that inside our lives, we haven't experienced that at all. We don't know anything about that. And yet the fantastic thing is that we can experience through the love of Jesus Christ, through his incarnation, through the fact that he died on the cross for us. Father, we know that Jesus Christ can give us love for other people. We know that he can change our lives and make us different. And Father, some of us have been here all this week, and some of us have just come tonight, and yet we really aren't willing to say, "Yeah, I'll give Jesus Christ everything. I love the Lord my God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, and I love my neighbor as myself." Father, I pray that during the invitation, during the time that follows right now, that you'll give people who really need to make decisions, adults, young people, people who belong to this church, people who have never been to this church before, that you'll give them the courage and the strength they need to step up here and to make a decision and to follow Jesus Christ completely and fully as the Savior and Lord, and that they'll have the mark of a Christian. Amen.